All right, we are back. We've been gone for a few weeks. Uncle Clint, I don't know where he went, man. He went into a shell somewhere. He's been gone, but we are back. We are ready, and we're excited because we are bringing a great pod to you guys tonight. We got Jeff Meller with us from ESPN, and that's a big deal for us. Caden is very excited to do a little short interview with Jeff. So thanks, Jeff. We appreciate you joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Happy to do it.
Thanks so much. And obviously with Uncle Clint back, he's got a lot on his mind. He's ready. And when he found out ESPN was going to be in the house, he's like, let's go. You know, he's like, I want to get here. Don't let him challenge you too much. Sometimes he brings controversy to the table just for fun. I think that's the way he goes about his business sometimes. But we're going to talk. We're going to do an interview. Then we're going to jump. We're going to do some March Madness. Obviously, this is the time of year. We got that going on. We got a game on in the backdrop. We're just keeping an eye on things on that front. Then we're going to close with some MLB stuff.
I did real quick. Did you see the White Sox give Verlander the round of applause when he threw that 96-mile-an-hour heater?
I did not see that.
96-mile-an-hour gasser from Verlander.
You will see that we...
Hey, not bad for a 42-year-old.
There's an ongoing thing in the family where... He made a small wager with my dad regarding Verlander getting to 300.
Ooh, I love that topic.
And now he's been, we've gone over it time and time again on this show because we don't think he's going to get there.
Yeah.
And it's starting to look less and less likely, I should say. All right, so let's get into this, guys. It's the sports life. We're talking sports. Let's go. All right, Caden. You got the lead. We're running an interview here. Hey, the good thing is, while you get your questions ready for Jeff, there's a positive thing here. There's no food. All right? There's nothing in his pockets. Normally, it's a theme of the show to yell at Caden about food being crunched around, things like that. So we don't have that as a problem. But there is a chance, Jeff, that we see the microphone topple over.
No.
That's normally at least once in the show we see a toppler.
Listen, I've been working in radio for over 20 years. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that happen. I can't tell you how many times I've been hosting a show and I've been leaning on the mic arm and knocked it down myself. I feel like I've done that a couple times in the last couple months, and there's nothing the immediate moments after you knock a mic off, but you're live on air. By yourself, too, by the way, freaks you out for a moment, and then you always, it just clicks in. If you've been doing it long enough, you just pick up the mic, and as long as you didn't knock out the mic sock, you just hold it and you roll with it until you can fix it. So
you're not alone, Caden.
Yeah,
you're not alone in the game. He's a seasoned pro. He did 10 varsity basketball games this year.
Nice.
Broadcasted. So he's getting his career with the podcast and the broadcasting. He's trying to kickstart it a little bit at a young age. So,
Caden, real quick before I'm interrupting, but that's great. That's one of the most important things is to just get those reps in, because the only way you're going to learn is by actually doing it, making mistakes that you go through, and then just moving on and learning from that. So until you actually do it, it's kind of like, all right, well, you're never going to learn until you actually get those reps going. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, Caden, what do you got? Give Jeff a question.
All right. First one is, tell us how you got started in the sports business and what are you working on today?
All right. So I got started in the sports business when I was 12. You know, I started listening to sports radio in Chicago back in the 90s. And I just kind of like fell in love with sports talk radio. And I was like, hey, this is something I like. I have fun listening to it. It entertains me. Is this something that I could actually do when I grow up? And so it was always something that was in the back of my mind, having, you know, just listened to it and loved it. And so I went to Loyola and studied communication there. And I was considering going into sports radio, but I was also considering going to law school, believe it or not. They were both something that I was interested in. I took the LSAT, and I was strongly considering going to law school, but I also did an internship at ESPN 1000 in Chicago my senior year. And the hands-on experience is what really was like, okay, this is something I really enjoy and I want to pursue and kind of see how it goes. And I loved my time at ESPN 1000. And when I was working there in 2003, I was offered a part-time producer job, and that's basically where I started. And once I did that, I started as a, you know, we had the White Sox back then for a couple of years from 2003 through the end of 2005. And so I started as like a part-time White Sox and weekend producer and just started there. And it was an interesting time because in 2003, you weren't born yet, Caden, but the Cubs, as your dad and uncle tell you,
we were at the game.
It was quite a roller coaster. And I was working at ESPN 1000 for a lot of those Cubs games in that playoff run with Steve Bartman, obviously, yep. and Pryor and Wood, and what a time to be working there as a, you know, just a young fan of Chicago sports. So that's kind of like how I started in the industry. And then I got plenty more to talk about if you guys want to get into it. But that's how I got my foot in the door. And then just, I've been working at ESPN 1000 since I graduated at Loyola.
You know what's cool about that is I've always heard that, like, sometimes you have to go to a small market. And, like, you were able to kind of start in a bigger market and stay in a bigger market. So you didn't have to go, like, to Tulsa, Oklahoma and, like, you know. And so it's kind of cool to start off in a big market.
No, listen, it was a great opportunity. Here's the push and the pull of that is that to be on air – it's really hard to, you know, jump into a major market. That's where being behind the scenes, I had to be willing to, that was something that I was willing to sacrifice initially. It was like, okay, I had a lot of reasons why I wanted to be in Chicago. My wife, who we were dating, she was from Chicago.
Okay.
And so I really wasn't super into the idea of moving, at least immediately. Now, it's something that I was maybe considering toying around with down the road. But, you know, basically start behind the scenes, I was able to do that. To get on the air, though, it was a longer progression because I wanted to stay in Chicago. And so that's something that if you're passionate about being on the air immediately, you know, it's a little different now because there's so many avenues where you can just create, like you guys are doing right now with the Sports Life, where you can just create your own content and start moving from there. It wasn't always like that, but you can do that now, and still, if you're passionate about being in a big market, you can maybe also start behind the scenes while still pursuing your own thing independently, which is something you weren't always able to do when I was getting started in the industry.
How long does it usually take to break in?
I mean, it's different for everybody, Clint. So, you know, I there's no magic number, right? Like, I think the biggest advice I can give someone is like, if you got to be passionate about it. You got to remind yourself because you're going to go through some times where you're like, why am I doing this? You know, it's not extremely lucrative when you first start out. And you just have to be willing to know that, okay, this is the sacrifice I'm going to make to do something that's fun. And
sure.
I love doing on a day in and day out basis. The one thing I'll say is I never feel like, oh, it's going to be a bad day. Because even my worst days, you know, talking sports is a great day. So, like, as long as you remind yourself that's what I'm doing this for because I have passion for it, it never feels like work. And so that's why it's easy to, like, I think mm-hmm. at the outset kind of make those sacrifices.
Did you ever have to – did you cut your teeth on this in high school and college at all? I mean, did you do anything with Loyola? Did you do, like, softball games or girls softball or baseball or anything like that?
I mean, so I really didn't. At Loyola, I did some – my freshman year, I did some radio at Loyola, but not a lot. And it was really – just about honing my skills in my classes and communication. Worked on my writing a lot. That's something that I take pride in. And it's funny because in terms of radio, you know, it's the spoken word. So, but there's still a lot of writing that goes into radio, right? So I think anytime you can kind of form your thoughts, and even if you're not actually typing or writing physically, you're still forming your thoughts and your sentences. And that's a form of writing. So
sure.
I think that's the biggest skill if you want to be good at this. It's just learning how to write because that'll help you speak, I think, no matter what you're doing and
for sure.
effectively. So I think that's what I worked on mostly in college. And then a lot of the other skills I developed in my career at ESPN when I was working there, you know, as a part-time and then full-time producer.
Cool. Did you have a mentor?
I mean, I had plenty of mentors at ESPN Chicago. Like when I first got there, Dan McNeil, Harry Tynowitz, Yurko, Johnny Yurkovich, It was Matt, Jericho, and Harry. I worked with them quite a bit. Yeah, so they were all, you know, positive influences. You know, Carmen DeFalco, Mark Silverman, Sylvie from Waddle and Sylvie.
Carmen lives in Western Springs, I think.
He does.
I was going to say, he's one of your West Coast neighbors
in Indiana.
Yes, Northwest Indiana Northwest for your, Indiana. Yeah. You know, so yeah, I had a lot of people who, when I got there, were, you know, people who, I think too, if you're in a good place, if you're working at a good place, hopefully people who are your senior will be willing to show you the ropes a little bit. You know, there's some people in business who won't, who are kind of
guys that are on the Chicago radio. Do they go to the studio every day?
Do
like Waddle and Silverman, are they in studio?
Pretty much. Now I will say, like, what COVID did was it made working from home, you know, via like Comrex or hotlines, like, more acceptable and a little more mainstream. So you don't have to do it, but I will say, if you're doing a podcast or a radio show, it is so much better to be in person, because one of the underrated elements, like when I listen to a podcast or something, you can see or hear people who maybe aren't professional or haven't had the experience. When you're talking over people, it's a terrible thing for the listener, right?
True.
And so, like, that's something that's, it's like, until you've done it, you may not realize it. And that gets lost more when you're not in the same area or the same room together.
How do you know when to cut in?
It's a feel thing. If you've done it long enough, right? Like, you know, and I think it probably helps too when you know who you're talking to. So, you know,
and their style, you know,
yeah, what I mean? And style, you have this natural, like, eye contact. That's why it's so important, I think, to be in the same room with people, because you can make that eye contact and you'll have those verbal cues where you know what to do. Like, oh, you know, oh, I can see he's wrapping up. And then there's that natural pause when someone can jump in.
Yeah. Caden, we might have touched on a little bit of the next question you got. He's probably touched on a couple things there, but go ahead and ask him anyway, because he might have one solid thing to give you.
Yeah, for a younger person interested in sports radio and TV, what advice do you have?
Yeah, so I mean, the advice first and foremost is you're a little young right now, Caden, so I think you're probably still figuring out who you are, but I'm sure you still have a strong personality and feeling as to who you are. So, you know, lean into that, because it's inevitable that, you know, you're 15, so you're going to, it's impossible not to mimic the people you hear and that you like, because that's just natural. I did it. Everybody in the business does it. Like, for you sure. Start out copying the people that you like, and that's natural and that's cool. But I think in order to differentiate from someone else, you just have to figure out who you are. And then the things that you talk about with your friends that make you laugh, that make them laugh, like, that's the stuff you have to lean into. You have to be an original, because if you're just going to be a carbon copy of someone else, it's just going to be a lesser version in a lot of ways, right?
For sure.
And I don't even know, you probably don't even know what carbon copies are. But, you know, the truth is...
Copying somebody else's style, man.
Yeah. Right. So, like, figure out how to do it well, but then also you don't want to lose who you are, because that's what's going to help you differentiate from other people. Yeah. So you can never avoid that. And then the other thing is, you know, we were talking about a little bit earlier, you got to get those reps in. So whatever it is, if you want to be good at this, you just got to keep doing it. You got to keep talking. You got to keep making mistakes and learning what those are. And then another, I think, tip is that what is good and is painful oftentimes is going back and listening to yourself, right? Because you're probably your harshest critic. But if you're actually real with yourself, that's where you can actually make the most improvements. And so it's not a fun process to go through doing air checks, but I think it's important, if you want to get better, to go back and listen to yourself and say, okay, that was bad, I have some verbal crutches, right, that a lot of people have.
Caleb Williams.
Listen,
I mean, you know what I'm saying? He's gonna coach himself through that. That will change next year.
Probably. I don't know. Maybe, unless though he doesn't listen to himself, which is possible, right?
I'm picturing like a PR person or somebody in his stable or in his.
It could, you know, he might, but he's also been doing it for a bit now. You know, like, in college sports is professional sports, right, these days. So I don't know. He may lose some of them, but at the same time, if nobody's going to tell him to, he may not either.
So you don't think he's listening to us then?
Who knows?
Do you think he's tuned in yet? We talked about it a little bit this year, just as a joke. But no, you're right. I think that's great advice from Jeff Caden, just in terms of developing your own style, listening to yourself. This is not my business, but I like listening back to us.
Yeah.
Because if I'm going to try to guide things along in a smooth way, I'm critiquing myself in a way. And it's interesting. It's interesting to go like, hey, am I too goofy? Am I laughing too much? Whatever. Like, what's your style? And you can really get a grasp on that, Caden. Yeah, and you can tell, like, are you not talking clearly enough? Are you those types of things?
That's a great point, because one of the games that I did, it was recorded, so it wasn't on the air. And the guy sent the file to me, and like I did a good job with it. Like I felt like for some reason for when I did it, I didn't think I did that good. But like when I listened to myself, I felt like I did good. But like for like the start, I just don't like hearing myself. I don't know, but like
I wouldn't be used to that either. There's something you're hearing your own.
Oh yeah, we all think we sound so much different. Because, yeah, you're right. Your voice, your ears, the way you take in the sound, it sounds different. And then you actually go back and listen. You're like, I don't sound like that. I mean, can't tell you. That's something you have to get over quickly. But once I think it's just like anything. Once it's practice. Once you do it a little bit, it quickly is like, okay, it's not as cringeworthy as I thought, right? Like you said, it's like, I didn't think it was. And then you go back and listen. You're like, you know what? I am okay. I can do this. And so it's both ways, right? It helps you get better. But then I think it also helps you recognize and give you a little bit of confidence too in what you're doing.
You got a good radio voice, and I think there's probably some guys out there that might have been good in the business that just didn't have the right sound for it, and it could have taken them down. If you don't have, think about a guy like Russillo. Russillo's just got a sound to him. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as you hear, is that Russillo? Well, I mean, he's like, his voice is like made for podcasting.
Of course, there's elite level athletes like LeBron James who just has that physical talent that nobody else can compete with. There's also the natural deep voice that a lot of guys have that I can't compete with, you can't compete with. That's just genetics. There's nothing you can do about it, right?
Genetics on the mic.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. So, you know, that's one thing where you're blessed with what you have and you kind of just got to move forward. The one thing is, though, I've heard plenty of people who make it in the business who, you know, I mean, unless you have like just an absolutely terrible voice that's tough to listen to. There are some people too who like just have a gravelly voice that, you know, like I'm the listener, makes it tough to listen to. Like that can be tough and challenging and you might never get past that. But fortunately, a lot of times the people who are in those positions, they've done something to their voice throughout their life, whatever it happens to be, what they're consuming, whether it's smoking, drinking, you know what I mean? Like a life hard lived can put miles on your vocal cords much quicker than other things.
That's true.
You know, that's, you know, take care of your voice if you want it to be your instrument in your career.
That's a good point. Caden, why don't you tee up that last question for him before this thing starts really getting hot? Because once we get into the sports talk, you know, you never know what's going to happen down here, you know. So
what has been your most memorable sports experience?
Wow. Man, there's so many. And this is the thing, too, with having done this for 20 years. God. You know, and I don't even think it's, like, related to the business, because I think some of my favorite moments actually happen just going as a fan.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I think that's the one thing, too, when you do this, you can get a little bit jaded, right? Like, it's easy to be cynical about things, always being critical of your team. For me, personally, I try not to fall into that trap. I'll say that, like, you'll hear lots of people just saying, oh, this sucks because of that. You know, they need to do this more. That's easy but also to remember, hey, there's a reason why I love watching sports. You know, try not to lose that, because it's easy to when you do it on a day in and day out basis. For me, like some of my favorite memories, you know, I was actually in attendance for game one of the 2005 World Series for the White Sox. Now, not game two. Game two is the one that everybody references when Paul Konerko hit, you know, game tying home run, and then Scotty Pods had the walk off. I was at game one.
Okay,
when
that was a 4-1 series, right? That was a
That was a sweep.
I don't know why
they swept.
They swept to win the World Series. They only lost one.
They got lucky on that catcher interference in that one game.
AJ Pierzynski against the Angels. Yeah. But you know, so attending game one of the World Series, that was
always a dream.
That was awesome. Watching Bobby Jenks close it out and the crowd just go crazy when the Sox took a 1-0 lead. It was pretty awesome to be in the stands for that game. I will say, you know what was crazy was in 2008, shortly after 2005, I had been to a World Series game, but then the White Sox ended up tied with the Twins, and they had to play a game 163, which was a blackout at what was then U.S. Cellular Field, now Wrigley Field. And so it was like just all of a sudden, impromptu 2008, the Sox didn't know they were going to play the game, and then all of a sudden tickets went on sale like a day before the game. I grabbed some tickets. My wife and I went to the game, and because it was like basically the White Sox had to win to make it to the postseason. So it was win or go home, you know, like you had. So to be, anytime you can be at a game where that's the situation, like the emotion in the stands is unbelievable.
MLB's created that, you know, that they recreated that with the
game six in 03 had that. I mean, the electricity in Wrigley Field at that point before that happened was like nothing.
No, for sure.
That's like the most memorable thing we've been. Like, we were at the game together. We were at the Barbie game.
I went to the following game too, which was
even that was rough.
Well, Wood hit the home run in that
Grand
game.
Slam.
We had the lead and then gave it away. And that
you know, but the electricity down there when we had the lead in the seventh,
it was
and the those little TVs. Remember, you said the little TVs under the thing, and you just saw the streets just filled.
Yeah,
it happened, and then it's like the wheels came off in that game. It just felt like so quickly.
Yeah.
But as fans, as like true baseball fans, sitting at that game, and then driving home that night and realizing that this kid was getting destroyed.
Oh yeah.
We didn't feel that way at the game at all. We were all over Gonzalez, who is on the field for his defense. Taylor made double play that he just booted, and we're like, I mean, that inning was over. So we had a lot of other thoughts about the way that inning played out that didn't involve Bartman, and that Bartman thing kind of came back later. And
the
guy was
not going to catch the ball.
Alou was not a great fielder, but he may have, he may have not. It doesn't matter. There was like four other guys trying to
catch the ball.
There was four other guys trying to touch the ball, and no one else hit it, and this kid did, and it was just, he was like a true Cubs fan.
Well, like Alou's reaction is really, I think, what fueled, like, Moises Alou being so upset Bartman in that moment is what, like, fueled all the fans to kind of converge on him and turn him into the villain.
You should put Bobby Jenks in your prayers right now, too. He lost his house and everything in California, and he's dying from stomach cancer.
Yeah. I heard he's got, stomach cancer. Yeah, the White Sox closer from back in the day he was just talking about.
Yeah. He was the White Sox closer in 2005.
When they won the World Series, he was good, man.
He was.
Speaking of electricity, I don't like the White Sox, but I was watching, I don't know why I was watching, it was like a month ago. I was just watching like YouTube videos of like the loudest crowd reactions, and it was like 2021 when Luis Garcia hit that home run against the Astros at the White Sox Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That was really electric. Like, that was one of the most like craziest, like, I don't know, it was just pretty crazy. I feel like.
You want to hear an interesting sidebar? You know what Moises Alou was very famous for, essentially, in Chicago? He didn't wear batting gloves. When he hit, he never wore batting gloves, and they said that he used to pee on his hands.
He peed on his hands. Yeah.
That was a big
pee on his hands.
To toughen up the skin. Yeah.
Exactly.
To toughen up his skin so that he, like, when you would grip the bat, the calluses.
Caden, you got to start doing this.
Nowadays,
stick to the batting gloves.
Nowadays, you got $150 batting gloves that kids are buying. Yeah. So, no, they're all real leather and all this stuff. The game has changed.
I'll be going to my 30th consecutive home opener this coming up.
30th consecutive?
30th in a row.
Wow. I used to go to the home openers with them, and man, it was like, I remember three different times it was snowing. And I'm like, this is not the time of year.
6 years ago, it got snowed out, and I had to take two days off work.
Unreal.
I had to take 2 days off work because the game got snowed out, and I had to go back the next day.
Another thing about Alou was he used to actually hold the bottom of the bat.
Mm-hmm.
So his left hand was actually out around the knob, which was kind
of
rare.
Of course.
So guys did, just certain guys. There was old school guys. Grace never wore batting gloves. He was always. Yeah.
Well,
and now they've changed in the last 10 years, but they have the axe handle now.
Yep.
Right? You know, so partially because players like Alou wanted to be gripping the bat lower on the knob. And they finally, what ended up happening though, is like guys would get hit and like the combination of being hit by a fastball in that spot and then with the knob, oftentimes would like they end up breaking their hammock bone. And so I, you know, that part was like, all right, well, we got, is there anything we can do? And then they started, you know, producing the X handle bats as well for some people.
So Jeff, you're at every Sox game.
I will be this year. Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations, by the way. That's really cool to get that opportunity, and you're going to be in baseball.
Have you done like every spring training game too with that?
So it's, you know, the way it works. So Connor McKnight, who did the pre and post for the previous 4 years, he moved, he took a job with CHSN to do some stuff for their TV broadcast. So that's what created the opening for us at ESPN 1000 to do the White Sox pre and post game. Now, I had filled in for Connor quite a bit over the last 4 years, probably, I don't know, probably 20 to 30, maybe 40 games over the last 4 years, when Connor would from time to time step in and do play-by-play.
Okay.
When Len Casper would be out or whatever reason. Like oftentimes I would fill in and do pre and post for Connor. So Connor took a job with CHSN where he's going to be doing some play-by-play stuff for them. Also like in-game broadcasts, he'll be doing some stat stuff on the sidelines. So he took that opportunity, which opened the job for us. But we didn't officially make the announcement until this past week. I think Monday is when they actually sent out the press release. So because we were still ESPN was still going through the interviewing process, this year I did not go to spring training. We've talked about it next year. The plan is I'll probably go out for a week or so. But we do not broadcast on radio every spring training game. We do about, I think, 8 to 10 every year during spring training. So I was not at any spring training games this year, but the plan is next year I will be.
All right. Now, ones you go to will probably be closer to the season. Towards the end of spring training?
I don't know. You know what, Clint? We haven't really discussed it because that's next year. Or it's more focused about what's going on this year. Okay. But the plan is I'll basically be at every home game for the White Sox at Wrigley Field. And then on the road, I'll be back at the studio for ESPN Chicago, which is 190 North State Street. Same building as ABC 7. So
is it in like the city?
Yes, yeah. We're actually right across the street from the State Street Chicago Theater.
Okay.
Is that where really do, where that's at?
Yeah.
Is that where they do all the radio shows out of, too? Same building?
Yes. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned copying somebody's style sometimes. You got to do that. So, in an effort to follow up with that, we're going to copy the St. Brown podcast. Do you listen to these pods? Do you listen? Okay.
So it's one of those things where doing what I do, worked on Waddle and Sylvie for a long time before I got the White Sox gig, like I was constantly monitoring what was going on, especially because Amon-Ra is pretty vocal and says
for sure
a lot of stuff, especially now that the Bears have hired Ben Johnson.
Yes, this is where we're coming.
It's a great tie. So I've been monitoring a lot of their clips and content. I cannot say that I've been listening to like full episodes.
Okay.
But the good news, or the way things work nowadays, like I've heard a lot of the clips because they put them out there. So, but I haven't been listening to full episodes.
So they got like a series of questions that they'll bring on an athlete and they'll ask them like these consistent questions, like build the best wide receiver. So who's your favorite hands guy? Who's your favorite route guy? And then they're building, you know, who would be like the perfect wideout basically. And they would ask that question to mainly wide receivers that they bring on and things like that. And then they always finish with asking these guys, how do you like your steak done?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you like your steak done?
I like my steak medium.
Perfect. All right. So this round, I like my steak medium too. Puka Nacua likes his steak medium too. And to me, these guys, they're red meat guys. Their old man was a bodybuilder.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They are big on red meat and they like it medium rare. And they clown on anybody on the show that says anything medium or higher. Well, how could you got to, and Puka's like, if it's below medium, it's chewy. I mean, that's my thing is like, I don't mind the taste, but I don't want it to get, I don't like the almost like the chewiness of it.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like these guys are pretty hard on this, and I'm gonna transition this into something.
Puka's my guy.
Puka's awesome. Puka's my cool. Guy. But so this guy's out here talking about how he likes his steak medium rare, and then Shots really got fired on the most recent podcast, and it upset me because he's been salty ever since Ben Johnson came here. Yeah. He's constantly the first thing he did was, where are the Bears getting all this money? You know, where are the Bears getting all this money? Well, I'll tell you. We got a rookie QB. We're on a rookie deal. This is how teams succeed in the NFL. And this is the reason Fields is gone. This is what, when you get a chance to get a rookie in, when you get a rookie QB in and you get their deal started, you got a 5-year window. Go win.
I still think Justin Fields was.
Stop it. It doesn't even matter. We're not. We've talked about it a lot. We're not going there again. Fields needed to be gone. He's gone. That conversation is over. But the point being is he asked that question, like, where are the Bears getting all their money? It's like, dude, just pay attention and you would know. But most recently, he throws out that Chicago's food is mid. So mid is like the new age of saying Chicago's food's overrated. And I'm like, in this city, you could come at a lot of stuff. You could come at high taxes. You can talk about our crime. You can do that. You know what? Fair, okay? But you don't come at Chicago food. Especially a guy, right? I'm thinking, okay, if this guy's from California or whatever – Maybe he's into his greens, or maybe Chicago's not the spot for seafood and greens. But he just told me he eats red meat every day. And I'm sorry, there's not many better cities in this country than Chicago for a good steak. I don't need to get into the steakhouses. I'm sure you've been to them, Jeff. I'm sure. I know you can tell Uncle Clint's been to them. He's been to a few of them, no doubt about it. And I've been to my share. I mean, there's not many. Maybe New York's up there in terms of grabbing some wine and a steak and a carrot cake afterwards or whatever it is. It's one of the top cities for it. Where else? Grab, pizza and beer. Chicago. Even our cheap eats. Even where there's a lot of great burger spots and things like that. This guy's coming here twice a year for Lions Bears, and he's going to come take shots at our food? I mean, Chicago's a top food, correct, once a year. Chicago is like a top place for food in this country. Jeff, what do you got on this, man? Because, I mean, that really took me. I like Amon Ra. I'm sitting here like, this guy's losing me.
Yeah, I mean, there's really anybody who's lived in Chicago for any amount of time, I mean, it's constantly amongst the best cities, rated as amongst the best cities in the world when it comes to dining. So if he's not getting good food in Chicago, that's on him because he's not going to the right places. There's so many great spots, as you mentioned. Like, I was actually went to the Capitol Grill on Friday night.
Fantastic.
And you can go to several Capitol Grills across the country.
It's one I've never been to.
It's funny that he mentions Capitol Grill on this pod because we have a little bit of a history with the Capitol Grill here. Uncle Clint has ventured out to make a wager with us. Uncle Clint makes the best wagers. Mm-hmm. The wagers are that we can only win.
And
he can only lose.
I like those.
So
I like
you have to accept these wagers, right? So he comes out once and says, Josh Allen will never make it to a Super Bowl. If he ever makes it to a Super Bowl, I'm taking all you guys for steak dinner. So Kate and I this year, we were like, I was hitting, I had the Capitol Grill dialed up. I'm ready to make a reservation this year. We were that close.
I want to make one comment, though. What about this stuff going on about outlawing the tush push? Absolutely ridiculous. That place should not be outlawed. That place should be legal and it should be allowed to be used.
I agree with that. I mean, an example, Jeff, would be that the Buffalo Bills couldn't really get it to work when they needed it.
True. They struggled with it. Now, the one thing, like, I would be, in my reasoning being, because you guys will remember before you were born, Kate, or maybe actually a couple years after you were born, you used to not be allowed to help the ball carrier on offense.
Until
2014, that's when they actually finally did away with the rule where you couldn't necessarily push your teammate. So my thing is, like, I think the Eagles would still be successful with that. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't look. Maybe it's because I grew up with it. I don't love, like, Saquon Barkley or Dallas Goedert running up behind Hurts and pushing him from behind. I think they'd still be extremely effective.
Yeah.
If Hurts was just sneaking it.
But the key to the play is the offensive lineman getting down low.
Agreed.
It's not the push from behind.
Which is why, though, I wouldn't have a problem if
saying keep the push, but maybe eliminate the help. Like, the help would be
That's the thing is, like, I don't need players running up from behind, pushing him forward. The other thing, too, and partially because you know what it is? I don't love when a running back will get stood up down 12 yards down the field And then all of a sudden, maybe it's like about to be whistled because of forward progress. And then all of a sudden, his lineman comes running down the field and slams into him and pushes him 5 yards forward. To me, that never felt like football. And again, I know that's a product of me growing up with the rule not being the same.
Yeah.
And they did eliminate that in 2014. But if they chose to go back and say, listen, we don't need offensive linemen or other players coming in and pushing offensive ball carriers forward, I'd be okay with that. And I think the play would still be effective. I still think the Eagles would convert the vast majority of their sneaks if they just couldn't push them from behind.
My opinion on it is that I'm good with it because everybody can do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's my thing, is that, mm-hmm. like, hey, you got a team out there that figured out how to do something better than everybody else. The other teams need to figure out how to do it. Or they need to figure out how to stop it. Again, go ahead and find a quarterback that can squat 800
Buffalo,
pounds like Hurts can, because I think Buffalo, that has something to do with
Buffalo
it.
Buffalo should be able to do it with Allen effectively. I mean, he's a big dude.
Buffalo's not capable of making adjustments. You know what I mean? And you saw that in that playoff game where it's like, all right, time to make an adjustment. This isn't working, okay? Switch gears. You got plenty of other ways to get it done. And I was concerned about that coaching staff going into the playoffs because I feel like they got one of the most explosive athletes in the league in Cook. They don't use him. Cook's touching the ball 12, 14 times a game, things like that. So I didn't have confidence in him. And again, I got confidence in Allen.
Machine in fantasy.
Here's the thing, though. I got confidence in the guy that you don't, and that's Allen. Allen plays well in the postseason every time. I'm sorry. A quarterback cannot put up 35, 42 points and lose, and you blame that team.
I do want to bring something up because they always complain about Caden Williams having an offensive coordinator, three different offensive coordinators. Jalen Hurts has never had the same offensive coordinator since high school, 2 years in a row, ever.
Well, I'll tell you something about Jalen Hurts.
Coordinator,
we don't criticize. We don't criticize Hurts on the show. We actually like him.
You should be able to adjust your offensive coordinator.
The Bears having different offensive coordinators is, again, it's a different scenario, right? Because Jalen Hurts has had good offensive coordinators, just different ones. The Bears were a complete dumpster fire this year.
Or could it be that he's a good enough quarterback to adjust to a bad offensive coordinator?
Unlikely. Unlikely. In the NFL, you got to have coaching. You got to have some continuity, especially when you have a rookie.
These guys obviously aren't pretty good. Hey, they're getting rid of them every year.
I'm going to tell you right now.
You're getting rid of these guys every year. They obviously ain't that good.
The good thing for you is that you're going to find out right now. The Bears are finally all in. They've finally shown us they're going to protect.
As long as
they got, you know what I mean?
The as long Bears as are Caleb holds on to this for too long, it ain't going to make no difference.
I think you're going to see something. I think Caleb Williams, for his rookie year, the expectations were a little too high. I think he was solid. He showed he could make all the throws. He's a great athlete. A rookie quarterback held on to the ball too long. I think I've heard that before.
Did it
I think
in college, too. It's going to be hard to break that habit.
A lot of guys do it, man. No, you know how you break it? An offensive coordinator that sets up some quick reads, sets up some slants, uses the tight end more. There's a million ways to break that habit. You start setting things up.
It also is their offensive line, too.
You got to play to your player's strengths. You got to utilize your personnel. And the Bears coaching staff was not capable of doing that. Eberflus was a defensive guy. He proved that. When he went out, the defense wasn't good. I mean, so Eberflus was not a good head coach. He was not a good leader in that way, and not a good leader of men either. I like the Johnson hire. Vrabel would have been
He's
my first
no
choice.
He's got no experience. Vrabel, zero head coaching experience.
Vrabel would have been my first choice. But again, for Chicago to actually say, we got one of the guys, that's rare. We usually go out and hire some dude no one's ever heard of from the Canadian Football League or something. And this year we actually went and got the guy that everybody else wanted. I think that's a big deal.
But it is. But all these great offensive coordinators usually fall short when the money's on the line. All these great offensive coordinators that are head coaches, it's usually a defensive head coach that ends up winning.
Well, the Packers guy.
It's a mix. Andy Reid was a great offensive coordinator.
It's true.
You know, now
it took him a lot of years to finally get over.
What about McVay? McVay, he was an OC, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was an OC. Some of these young guys, Shanahan was an OC. Again, they're not necessarily all winning Super Bowls.
I think it just shows you can win both ways. But, you know, to Caden's point about, like, they fixed the offensive line. They put the resources in the Bears, that is, into, you know, putting Caleb in position to succeed. We'll see, right?
Like, three and a half seconds of holding on to the ball is not the offensive line's fault.
No. I'm sorry. Well, you're right, Clint, but what I'll say is I do think, you know, it's yeah, that was on Caleb had plenty of issues that he was responsible for.
It's probably about half the sacks, I would say.
Yeah, but you know what? This is where I'll tell you, I do think the hiring of Ben Johnson, we'll see, right? Like, you're skeptical. I understand that. I think when you see what everybody around the league says about him, a lot of people are really excited about Ben Johnson and when he gets the opportunity. He was the most sought-after guy last offseason. You know, so usually, and you're right, like, you never, one of those things, like, a coach never knows what they don't know until they actually start doing it. Like, you don't know what you don't know. Right. That's not just coaching, but that's with any job. Until you've done it, you don't know what you don't know. So we'll see. I just think that the Bears have done, at least Ryan Poles has done a nice job of landing Ben Johnson, fixing the offensive line in front of Caleb Williams. And so now they've given him everything that they basically need. And I think Ben Johnson, he's going to come in and coach Caleb Williams hard, and he's not going to settle for him holding on to the ball. He's going to have answers to the test for Caleb Williams to go ahead and take advantage of. And so we'll see, you know, as Bears fans, that we're all hoping that Caleb can kind of like show that why he was drafted.
The last two guys.
He would rather be right.
The last two big guys. The last two.
He's not. You know what? There's a lot of guys like you in radio.
Claims. The last two big guys.
Would rather be right than.
Would rather be right than have the Bears succeed.
The last two big guys, though, like they're like the Cleveland head coach and the Minnesota head coach. These guys are great head coaches, but they can't get the job done. These guys cannot get the job done.
Okay, who's the Cleveland coach?
Cleveland coach was coach of the year.
I think coach of the year. He's not very good. He's almost on the hot seat.
See, that's because management and stuff don't help him. But 2 years ago, two or 3 years ago, he was coach of the year.
You can't even get into Cleveland with the signing. I mean, the Deshaun Watson thing
destroyed the whole team.
No, the Deshaun Watson thing is going to go down as one of the worst signings in the history of sports, not the NFL. Sports. That's how bad it is.
No, of course. No, his contract's one of the worst in sports. And don't forget, too, they traded like 3 first-round picks for him. You know, so they were hell-bent on him working out. And once everything went sideways on him, obviously because of all the off-field issues, and then, you know, he missed significant time because of injury, like their whole franchise has been
another thing, too, like Cincinnati. Okay, they signed Chase and they signed
Higgins.
They didn't address the defensive problems. They're going to have to score 50 points a game to win.
And they're going to try. That's what Cincinnati does. They're going to, and you know what? In sports, money talks. Miles Garrett, trade demand. Here I come. Letter to Cleveland. Thank you, guys, but I want to go win. We're going to make you the highest paid defensive player of all time. Okay, I'm okay losing all the time again. Like, what? You know what I mean? Like, if you want to go win, Josh Allen, that dude wants to win. Josh Allen didn't take the highest deal he could have got.
Derrick Henry wants to win, and they don't use him the right way. What are you doing?
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, Josh Allen, I think he's still making less money than Dak.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm sorry. Dak Prescott, I mean, I'm not going to talk down on him, but he's just not a top quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, though,
Allen is.
Every situation's different, too, right? Like, Josh Allen, like, understands. And I think he even said it after he signed his most recent contract extension. What's, you know, an extra $5 million is not going to change his lifestyle in any way whatsoever.
He must be
on a buzzer beater.
Who did?
Maryland.
No.
Buzzer beater.
The Terps just upset.
The Colorado State had a 3 with like 6 seconds. They called a timeout and the guy had like a buzzer beater.
Yeah. 72 seconds.
Man, are they looking at it or is it done?
No,
we wanted Colorado State. I'll announce why. And we could jump into March Madness right now if you guys want to, but we're in this survival. It's a day-by-day survival. So every day, it's more fun because if you can survive, and what we notice is guys will make a pick like, okay, an upset happened in the round before, so Colorado State's at 12, so all these people pile on and pick Maryland. I don't like that strategy. I take strategies, I go big dogs, because you'd be surprised how many guys fall apart within the first 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting here like, if you got, there's only like 8, I think there's only 9 or 10 days of the tournament. Like if you go day by day,
sure,
by
yeah,
day,
yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
only 10 days of the tournament. So you're like, you got 4 1-seeds and 4 2-seeds. You got 8, that's like 8 opportunities to pick those teams right there. Doing a day by day survivor in NCAA is, to me, is more fun than the tournament.
Yeah.
Because checking the brackets and like, You can literally have a perfect first round. If your champ don't win in those things, you're toast.
That was like me when I tried to stay alive in the NFL Survivor by taking the Carolina Panthers. Oh, boy, was that a disastrous move.
No, there's something. That's just good game theory. Where you try.
My first day was perfect. I had everything right except for the Clemson game. Like, then the second day was so bad.
But the way all those bracket systems work, no one really reads up on them to figure it out. But it's like each round you get more points for the win. So like the championship game is enough wins to make up for like.
They got one guy on ESPN that they always use his bracket. I can't think of the guy. Everybody uses his bracket.
Might be Jay Billis.
No, it's
Jay Billis
is college football. He's
on the radio all the time. I can't think of the guy's name. Everybody uses his bracket.
College sports. We're not college sports guys. Mm-hmm. Of course, we do March Madness.
I watch a lot of college basketball.
Canaan sports anything. Of course. High school sports.
You're at the sweet age where you have no responsibilities except to watch. Just wait. It'll ratchet up as you get older.
He doesn't have a sports quota like we got. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, I had to start prioritizing, like, where's my time going?
Yes.
In college, you're watching and you're trying to figure out what has changed. And when you watch these games, you're watching good defense and poor shooting. That's a consistent theme.
St. John's was a perfect example.
Check the box scores. Mm-hmm. You're routinely seeing 35 to 45% shooting from the floor. It hasn't – and if you walk across those box scores, like, that's why the games feel ugly when you're watching them. It's like they're ugly not by mistake.
28% for St. John's against Arkansas.
That's how low it was. But I'm telling you, it's not as unusual as you might think. And another thing going on in college sports that's interesting is I'll be watching the games and I'm going – man, these guys look old to me, and I'm old. I'm like, but these guys look old to me. And then I look it up and I see Auburn's average age on the Auburn team this year, 23. Oklahoma City Thunder, 24 is their average age. So think about that. You know what I mean? These guys, and what's happening is, and my buddy Pat Woods was telling me about this, he says guys can go to JUCO now, play 2 years there, and then come over and be eligible as a first-year eligible player and play another four.
Yeah.
So that's where you're seeing the 24-year-old
and
seniors.
And NIL has made it lucrative now for guys to try and get that fifth and sixth year of college so that they're making money now courtesy of NIL rather than going, and playing overseas or something.
That's why I was impressed this year, and I didn't like Calipari when he was with Kentucky. I thought he always choked us out. But this year I was impressed with him because the NIL is the opposite of the way he does business because he had all those one-and-done guys.
Right.
Now he's got to get guys that are going to stay. And he lost his first five games of the year at Arkansas. 0-5 he started. And then blew back and got these guys into the Sweet 16. So, I mean, that's a good job of coaching.
Yeah, a nice comeback by
Calipari.
It has changed a lot. You talk about bringing in the NIL side, bringing in the money. It changes the whole game. The transfer portal stuff, too, is a big thing.
Like,
you
that's start the thinking, biggest thing.
The competition now, to come in as a freshman, you're probably going to want to go play JUCO because you come in as a freshman, now you're not competing with last year's sophomores and juniors. You're competing with sophomores and juniors that weren't happy on other teams that want to transfer over.
Sure. No, I guess it depends, too, on like what kind of freshman you are, right? Like if you're a top 100 freshman, you're going to want to play immediately.
That's why I was surprised Arch hit. I was surprised.
But you're competing against the transfer portal.
Absolutely.
You're not the way you used to be like, who's coming into this team this year? Who do I have to watch out for? Now you're like, who's going to switch over from this school to that school?
And I think that has dispersed the talent a lot. And because of that, now you've got mid-majors that are, that have plenty of good players because of, like NIL, transfer portal, recruiting, switching teams. Now the blue bloods that you're used to, they don't have the depth. They may have some of the top high-end players, but their depth, after they're starting five, kids leave because they're getting offered from other schools to say, hey, come over here, make $500K, make $1 million, play for us where you're going to play 30 minutes a game rather than sit on the bench for Duke. That didn't used to be the case. That's why the stud programs used to be able, you could count on them for the most part to usually make deep runs, at least to the Sweet 16. But I think it's so hard it's just over the last 10 years, things have changed dramatically. It's really hard to predict brackets because I don't think anybody has a good handle on which teams are to beat which teams.
I have no idea. Are pretty chalky. I mean, they're pretty much.
Yeah, but it fluctuates from year to year. Like, you know, this year might be a chalk year, but I remember a couple years ago, it was like upsets all over the place. You know,
and to your point, you really, it could be chalk, but you really have no idea. What I mean by that is, like, I'm looking going, the only thing I know about this is that that team's a 4 and that team's a 13. Yeah. I couldn't name a guy on most of these rosters.
The SEC,
I don't know.
Out of 64 or 65 teams, the SEC puts 14 or 15 teams in. I mean,
I'm telling you right now,
you're talking about domination.
I watched the first half of that Colorado State Maryland game. That Colorado State team is a good team. Yeah, I mean, they got good players.
But I think everybody's 5 who made the tournament. Most of the teams in the tournament have a good 5. Like, if they're playing their best, they're shooting well that night. You can go through a lot of the teams in the bracket and say, this team, if they're shooting well and the other team isn't, they can beat them easily.
Right. How does your bracket look?
I'll be honest. I have, in terms of, like, following college hoops, I have never been farther removed from, like, really knowing what I was talking about. You know, I've been locked in on baseball, you know, getting ready for a lot of Sox stuff. Not that I'm, like, I will say, like, outside of March Madness, like, I'm not a huge college hoops because during football season up through, you know, the Super Bowl, I have so much professional football with the Bears post game, with fantasy football coverage. Like I'm so locked in that monopolizes so much of my time.
Oh, yeah.
That it's hard to watch. So college hoops, like, I am definitely not really up, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm definitely not. I will tell you that.
It's funny. Your analysis that you just gave is very similar to what you actually hear the guys on TV do. So those guys are not well versed on it either. I mean, you got, like, Billis and guys, like, they got Barkley on there. Barkley doesn't know what's going on.
No.
And they'll say stuff. They'll go like, yeah, if this team shoots really good from 3, they're going to have a chance to win this game. And it's like, yeah.
But
you know what I mean? Because no.
But it's true.
I know it's very basic.
Like, but to your point, and this may be something to, you know, think about, Caden, just for, like, people who are aspiring. I always say, like, you know, Barkley, the TNT crew, nobody is watching them. Everyone knows that it's not really about the analysis. It's because it's an entertaining product.
For sure.
And that's what they're being paid, is to be entertaining. Charles Barkley, like, that's the reason he makes the money he does. It's not really because of his analysis. It's because, I mean, he will be critical. He's not afraid to be critical of players. And I think everybody likes a former athlete who has, you know, skins on the wall, who could say, I've been there, I've done that, and then will criticize players because he's got the experience to work off of. But also, above all else, he's entertaining when he does it.
Yeah. I remember, it was the first round, it was like the Michigan halftime. Yeah, it was like the Michigan UC Irvine halftime show, and Charles Barkley was on it, and Kenny asked Charles Barkley, he was like, all right, so what's your halftime thoughts? He was like, that's a good question. He's like, I'll be totally honest, I was watching the Michigan State Bryant game. I was not even watching the Michigan game.
That's the way.
That clip went viral, and everybody saw it, and everyone laughs, and they love Charles Barkley. And part of it is he's honest, too, right?
Yeah.
He didn't try and, like, pretend like, you know, he could have made something up and tried to wing it.
He says it on TNT all the time that he doesn't watch a lot of NBA. Yeah. He's like, I don't watch a lot of NBA. But the nights I'm here, you know, I try to tune into the game that we're going to talk about at halftime, but I'm not watching the game.
The truth is, like, people don't watch Charles Barkley for the analysis. They just don't. No. It's like, hey, he's a personality, and he's built up enough equity over time where he didn't – when he first started as an analyst, he wasn't always doing this. He would give you a little more nuts and bolts, but he's gotten to the point where – people are watching because they want to see what he's going to say, and it's not really related to the game or the breakdown. You know what I mean?
And the whole show, right?
He doesn't have to be a great announcer, but people are starting to watch.
If you can YouTube stuff on that show, and you'll fall out of your chair.
Yeah.
I mean, the time Shaq got his feet tangled up in the cords, and he got his feet tangled up in the cords, and then he was trying to beat Kenny to the screen.
Yes.
Because they do that all the time. Shaq took the whole thing with him. Because when Shaq went down, he takes the whole thing with him, and then they're like, they're going to check on him, and he's like, y'all did that to me! Y'all tied it around my feet! And he was like, it shows his shoe laying on the ground.
Yeah. I know.
So, looks like I'm folding.
It is. I remember when I was younger, I would be like, this game's over. It's the third quarter. I'm staying up.
Sure.
Because I want to hear these guys talk after the game. I want to watch them make me laugh for 15 to 20 minutes when this game's over, and that's what they do. And that's,
and that's why everybody loves them. It's not because of the analysis.
Like, Jeff, I can't watch NBA basketball anymore because it's not like it was when we were kids. I mean, there is no defense played in the game anymore. Every game's 130, 140 points.
No, it's the three.
Michael Jordan had averaged 50 a game.
No, dude, the analytics have changed the game.
It's broken the game aesthetically. Like from a viewer's perspective, there are every team takes 53s, and that's not it. It's like part of the reason when we were growing up watching hoops, like there were different styles teams, but now everyone's playing the same style. Everybody's got guys who are hovering around the 3-point line, corner threes,
mid-range,
driving, guys 7 foot tall blasting 3-pointers. That never happened when we were kids.
What's the solution? I mean, if you really want to get into it, it's probably, and I don't think they would ever do this, but it's the NBA assessing what they should do is make the 3-point shot less valuable. How do you do that? Do you want to introduce like threes and fours? Like, because now it would only be worth, it's not worth 33% more.
Right, exactly.
I mean, like you did back in the old days.
You move it further away. Like, that's,
you
can
do that, but people can still hit that shot. It's really about, like, would you make it, again, like you have, it can't be worth as much as it is in comparison to what it is now, because nobody will take mid-range shots because it's just not worth it.
Right.
I think they should do it back when they did, like Wilt was around, 2 points for everything. She eliminates the 3-pointer entirely.
I still like basketball. I'm like one of the rare guys. I still like
it. I still like
watching NBA.
I can't watch it.
I get it that you don't like it, but I still, I mean, I think that the athletes today are far better.
Yeah, no,
I think that the fifth guy, the guys coming off the bench, could have been like studs back in the day. These guys are so athletic. The handles they got, the size and athletic. You talk about 7-footers shooting. The post guys don't post up. I saw a stat the other day that the kid from Michigan, Edie, he's posted
Purdue,
up.
Purdue, Zach Edie.
Oh, I'm sorry, right, Purdue, yeah. He's posted up like a handful of times.
How's he doing the whole season.
He's fine. He's about what they thought, an 8-6 guy or something like that. But he's
off top. Honestly, the Bulls really put the Lakers in the coffin. I slept till like 12 o'clock.
He's up late watching the Bulls take the Lakers.
Since March, since they actually traded away Zach LaVine, they've been fun to watch. Yes. Like Kobe White, Josh Giddey, Matis Bezalis.
Yeah, Bezalis shot 31 last night.
Like they're fun to watch. It's just, it's unfortunate it took them as long as it did to finally commit to that direction. I know everybody's like upset, like, oh, they're hurting their chances in the lottery. But like that, what they've done all March with just letting the offense run through Giddey and Kobe White has been fun. Like,
yeah, it's true.
And so this is where I get back to, like, you can always be a critic and be like, how are we going to win a championship if you don't get a superstar player? I get it. Like, but if you're a Bulls fan and you weren't having fun all of March watching Kobe White score almost 30 points a game, watching Josh Giddey always have a chance at a triple-double, I mean, then I don't know. You're always going to set yourself up for failure and disappointment because only one out of 30 or 32 teams is going to win a championship every year. If that's the only way you can enjoy sports, then I hate to tell you, but you're setting yourself up for failure.
I like to see these high-powered athletes come down here and get their bell rung by a guy like Bill Laimbeer several times and see if they keep coming not down in the paint.
And you know what? Some of that stuff's oversold. There was a couple teams that played rough. The rest of them, no one got more calls in the history of the sports than Michael Jordan.
No doubt.
Tick-tock, little tactic. I'm just saying, 100%. It was not as rough as people. There was a couple teams that were rough on Mike. But when you watch it, the vast majority of the NBA was not rough on him.
You could blow air on Mike and he'd get 2 free throws. if you get 15 free throws a game and don't average 30, you ain't very good. No. You really ain't very good.
Again, the NBA has changed a lot. It's some guys still love it, but to your point about the Bulls, I agree. My only issue with it is we saw it last year. It was the same thing. LaVine went out hurt instead of being traded, and the Bulls played better.
That was the
telltale sign.
Disappointing thing is that they ran it back this year. Right. I mean, now, I think a lot of people knew at the time when they were signing Zach LaVine to that extension that that wasn't the right direction for the Bulls and that they were going to put themselves in a spot that they ultimately did.
Yeah.
You know, empty calories. So hopefully now that he's been traded and they're, you know, I don't know, maybe they we'll see if they actually make the playoffs. You know,
they will. They're definitely going to make.
Well, I mean,
don't know why they did.
They're gonna make the play in. Yeah. Will they get through the playoffs? Like, will they beat Orlando?
No,
if they, I heard they have a chance. Well, they've had a lot. Of
they do have a chance.
The Magic this year.
It's been like, like I said, part of me is like, if you're always like, just it's got to be about a championship, then it's hard to like enjoy sports.
Kobe White has had like, it's not like a 12 game streak of 20 more points.
Yeah. He's averaging, I think, just shy of 20.
I like Kobe. He's fun to watch. I really like him.
Yeah.
I just, the Levine thing for me, the reason they signed them is because they can't get the top free agent class to Chicago. They haven't been able to do it. Rose came through the draft. But other than that, I mean, there have been many opportunities in the last 25, 30 years.
The last big time free agent we signed was DeMar DeRozan. And that was like,
and again, that's ago. Not big time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is.
Well,
I'm talking about when guys like, you know, Giannis end up on the block. Well, you don't see the
book. You got a guy like Luke, and nobody even knows he's being traded. He just ends up over in LA. I mean, Lucas traded to LA. Nobody even knew he was on the block.
You're going to try to convince me LeBron James didn't know that was in the works. I mean, you saw LeBron all of a sudden had like a different spark to his game about 2 weeks before that trade.
Remember,
LeBron all of a sudden's going for 30, 10, and 8.
Remember years ago, Pau Gasol couldn't go to one team, and then all of a sudden he ends up magically over on the Lakers.
They blocked him
from going to another team, and then he ends up on the Lakers.
His Lakers landing was a mystery. This Luka thing is I've talked about it on multiple pods already. It's the most ludicrous trade I've ever seen. You an NBA guy, top five in the league, without a doubt.
25 years old.
Probably top three. In his prime, 25. You do not get rid of him. I don't care. And again, I said the only guy I would even consider trading Luka for is Giannis. That's it. He's the only guy. And I wouldn't even do it. But that's the only conversation.
Or Joker.
No, I wouldn't do it for Joker. He's too old. Anthony Davis? Anthony Davis spends more time with street clothes on than he does playing. And every game he plays, I said it before he got hurt. Mm-hmm. I go, he's always hurt, but no one knows what's wrong with him. You ever notice that? Like, they're like, AD's out again. Well, what's his injury? They're like, they think he might have strained an oblique. And no one really knows what's ever wrong with AD. They just know that he's always on the floor and he's always hurt. And he, from a talent perspective, not many guys more talented than AD. I mean, he's a great defender. He can shoot. He can do it. He's just not on the floor enough. And you're going to take a guy like Luka, who's been durable, 25 years old, in his prime, can score, can do it all, took a garbage team to the finals last year. That guy in Dallas, he's going to lose his job. I mean, there's just
no way. Oh, yeah, definitely.
He's going to be done. All right, we're moving on. All right, guys, we don't want to keep Jeff here all night, even though we know he wants to stay. I mean, the guy does sports all day, drives home, and gets to do more sports. I mean, this is a great life.
Anybody comes in here with an Expos hoodie's ready to go.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the time. This
like
is
that old school. Do you even know the Expos?
No.
If you had to guess, what do you think this is?
The Astros?
No. He's looking. The Expos.
I know. Is it like the new
logo?
Okay, so you're at, are they?
Where do you think they're from?
I think they're from Philadelphia.
Does have a little bit. It looks a little like the Phillies logo. Really, I can see that.
I really don't have you schooled on these guys. I thought you would have known these.
Yeah. Baseball?
They're the Washington Nationals.
You failed as a father, Brett.
I know.
So the Expos, Montreal Expos, baseball team through. When did they move to? They moved to Washington. They became the Nationals.
God, that's got to have been 20 years.
At least 20. Yeah.
Probably more than that.
2002, maybe.
Well, who do you think the best Expo was?
All time, Pedro Martinez.
I would go.
I was gonna say Gary Carter.
Gary Carter, he's Mr. Expo. He's
I liked Vladdy.
Yeah, Vladdy Guerrero Jr. His dad played for the Expos.
The old man was the best bad ball hitter.
He can hit all kinds of junk. He can hit it down.
That dude would hit balls off his feet.
Well, there's highlights of ball hitting the dirt and him still hitting a single.
He swung at everything, man. He was a special player, but we all named
him. But he was close to a 300 hitter, wasn't he? I mean, his average was
Pedro Martinez.
Oh yeah, he was
for his size.
Oh, I love him.
When you talk about pound for pound, it's hard to go far away from Pedro Martinez.
I love Pedro. Pedro was like just my guy. Like, I loved watching him. He started in Montreal. Well, he started in LA with the Dodgers. They traded him to Montreal. He started to take off in Montreal. I think he won his first Cy Young there. Then he was traded to the Red Sox and just, you know, was awesome. There was a stretch when, in the height of the steroid era, seen anything about the steroid era in baseball, learned a little bit about it. Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, basically any power hitter who was hitting 40, 50 bombs was on steroids or PEDs. And during that time from like 99 to 03, go back and look at Pedro Martinez's stats. He'd lead the league in ERA with like a 1.98 ERA. And the next closest guy would be like Roger Clemens, who had like a 3.7.
Yeah.
It was just stupid. On steroids.
Yeah, Clemens was, yeah.
Yeah, but Pedro Martinez, you could look at him and be like, he's not. Right. He's not on steroids.
Right, exactly. And Pedro was a competitor.
The thing he loved to compete. About that steroid era was, I mean, those guys saved baseball and then got thrown under the rug. Those guys saved the game of baseball. Baseball was dead.
Everybody knew what was happening at the time, and that's why guys that grew up through the era, like guys our age basically, are not as, I mean, you might speak differently about it, but we're not as like, oh, those guys don't belong in the, I'm not like that, because I'm like, man, I was enjoying the time. You knew what was happening. They were marketing it with the cartoon characters. Yeah.
How do you keep Palmeiro locked? 500 homers, 3,000 hits, and the guy's not in the Hall of Fame.
Well, Palmeiro's probably the worst case, because he was the, I did not point his finger at Congress and the whole thing, so he probably was the worst, where the other guys were just like, you know what, I did what I did, I'm not going to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with anything with performance-enhancing drugs is that it's the collateral damage around it, right? Like, I don't blame the guys, like Barry Bonds, like the story, Caden, for you and younger listeners who didn't live through it like we did, Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa saved baseball in 98. After the strike in 94, fans were disenchanted with baseball because all of a sudden they just stopped and ended a season, didn't play a World Series because they were arguing about money. So fans were pissed. And then sure enough, a couple of years, they came back. They had attendance issues. And then all of a sudden, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa have the great home run chase of 98, clearly steroid enhanced. And all of a sudden, baseball was back, you know, in the headlines again, and everybody loved it. They loved watching Sammy and Mark McGwire battle to see who could break the home run record. Meanwhile, Barry Bonds was the undisputed best player in baseball. Everybody knew it. He did not initially do performance enhancing drugs, but he saw, like, all of a sudden, the guy who had won three straight MVP awards saw Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa getting all the headlines because they were saving, quote unquote, saving baseball. So sure enough, what did he do? He's like, all right, well, if I can only hit 40 home runs and these guys are hitting 65 or 70, what should I, to keep up with them, I might as well do what they're doing. And sure enough, he ends up taking, you know, PEDs, hitting 73 home runs, breaking the record, and then just going on and continuing his trajectory as one of the greatest baseball players you ever see. But he had to do it to keep up with them. And that's what. And all the guys who weren't as good as Barry Bonds.
He's
who
the guy that frustrates me the most because he was a Hall of Famer before.
Of course,
Bonds is the greatest player I've ever seen. In my lifetime, a guy that didn't swing at something that was an inch off the strike zone. I mean, he was just everything was phenomenal. Right. Every ball he hit hard.
Of course.
And if you look at the stretch he had over like this 4-year span, the numbers are just absolutely silly. And I'm glad you brought him up because it leads me to my next topic, which is. Obviously, we're going MLB stuff right now. How long does Shohei need to do this just to say he's the greatest ever? I mean, because I'm almost there. I think I said it last year, I'm like, he does this, if he starts pitching again, and he pitches and wins 15, 20 games, if he wins 15 games another couple times with a sub-3 ERA in that range, I mean, I'm going to start saying this guy's the greatest.
See, this is, it's old school versus, I wonder how do you even think about wins, Caden? Did they even cross your mind?
Wins, like pitching wise?
A little bit? Yeah. Okay. Because it's so weird because we grew up on it, but it's definitely Justin Verlander's list.
Is he going to make it?
I think he's going to do everything he can to make sure that he's out there pitching. They're going to have to like basically pry the glove off of his dead hand. You know, he's going to keep trying. Like, what's he at? Right. Is he at 265? What's he at?
He needs 38.
38.
Yeah.
He's not gonna. I'm rooting for him.
You don't think he's gonna make it?
I think it's gonna be hard because he's gonna probably need to pitch.
I think he's putting down about 15 this year. That'll get him a lot closer.
I mean,
what team?
Here's my thing, and here's why I'm with Jeff. It's because they need to lower the number of innings to qualify for a win for him to get there. Guys,
absolutely not.
No, you should be arguing in favor because the only way he's going to get there. They start pulling guys now.
No, it's,
if you're in the 80s in pitches and you're in the fourth inning,
well,
six innings for a win.
It's not even about pitches. It's about like they won't let you go through the lineup a third time. Like, and 100%. That's again back to analytics, like breaking basketball. It's broken the starting pitcher.
Yeah. The other day we got Imanaga throwing a no-hitter in Japan. They pull him at 69 pitches. Council should be terminated for this. Gone.
It's his first start of the year.
I don't care. It's ridiculous.
You know,
it's about winning. You got to win. That's the whole purpose of being out there is winning.
You're still passionate about it, Clint. The crazy thing is, this has been happening like with no-hitters over the last 5 years.
Oh, for sure.
Pretty regularly. To the point now where very few people are even as passionate as you are. Like, I take calls all the time. It used to be, like, the conversation was a guy would have 130 pitches in the eighth inning, and they were like, you got to let him go out there and try and get it. And we're talking, like, Mark Pryor, whatever, mm-hmm. going 130 pitches. Now, like, it's if you're at 80 pitches, they don't even bat an eye. And fans have kind of accepted it.
Caden's used to it.
We know that that's the...
You think a guy like Nolan Ryan had ever come out? Well, you couldn't pry him off the mound. I don't care if you threw 150 pitches.
I'm laughing.
And you know what? His arm never broke down either.
It's funny that you mentioned Ryan, because Ryan's with all the technology and all the stuff that's in place in baseball, I still do not think anyone throws the ball harder than Nolan Ryan. When I watch Nolan Ryan footage... Mm-hmm. The ball from the time it leaves his hands, the times it gets to the plate, you can give me the guy to Cubs head.
Closer,
no one throws harder than that guy. I'm telling you, the clocks or the radar.
No, games, I know.
He was unbelievable.
There's a documentary. I don't know if it's still on Netflix on Nolan.
Yeah, that's what I was on. I watched that for sure.
Yeah, it was, and they kind of went into it. I haven't watched it in a while, so I don't really remember the specifics. But they, 103. They were like, he was probably throwing 103, 104. It's certainly within the realm of possibility.
But that's a country boy right there.
With them old garbage radar guns they were using back in the 80s. Come on.
Oh, but I sidetracked you. You were asking about Otani.
Yeah, like,
I was having the same thought in my head, like, not too long ago. You know, I guess it really just comes down to semantics. Like, how long does a guy have to be, quote unquote, you know, playing for you to consider him the greatest? And I think he's shown that what he's been able to do, again, in this day and age where everything's specialized and pitchers throw as hard as they do, and everything's about, like, you have pitch labs where what Otani has to hit and compete against nowadays, he's clearly the best hitter in baseball after last year's 50-50, right? He had a 400 on base percentage. Like, what you have to do now as a hitter to be able to do, to accomplish what he's done, I'm pretty much sold. I don't need any more evidence. I just wonder how much longer will they go where they say, okay, like, it's not in our best interest to let him keep pitching. Because pitching, you're just risking so many injuries. Like, if I'm the Dodgers, I want him hitting in my lineup every day.
I despise the designated hitter. I hate the designated hitter.
Yeah.
I brought up on the air here before, like, I like Frank Thomas. I don't think Frank Thomas ever makes the Hall of Fame, no way, no how, if it wasn't for the designated hitter. Because he would not have played long enough because he would have been injured and out of baseball, and he would not have been able to pad his stats by being able to sit on the bench and only hit.
But here's the thing.
I mean, to me, what
I'm trying to explain to you is that there is a designated hitter. So you can't see a guy that's hitting as a designated hitter is padding his stats. He's playing a position.
I mean, it's not
a position.
I like it. I like the
DH. You don't have to go on the field.
I like it. I think that a guy you'll never convince me that a guy like Shohei Ohtani, who can also pitch, by the way, can't find a spot for him at first base or whatever. The guy
if there was no designated hitter. They would find a spot.
They would. He did play outfield in Japan. He could easily play right field.
And the chances of him getting hurt would be a heck of a lot more if he was actually in the field instead of standing around sitting on the bench.
I do not think that people put enough value in the fact that he can pitch. Like, we just talked about it with the specialization thing. I know that he gets a lot of attention, but honestly, to be able to do both of those things at the level that he does them at is so ridiculous.
Sure.
No. Because I don't know, I mean, a lot of guys don't he didn't pitch last year, so you forget. What he was doing with the Angels, He was just continually getting better and smarter and more like where he's figuring guys out, and you're watching him on the mound, like he's doing this and he's looking and he's changing up pitches, and you're going, oh my God, he's actually getting good at pitching right now. Like, he's figuring it out. He could be scary when he comes back. The Dodgers, what is going on? I mean, the Dodgers now, they won last year with no Glasnow, okay? No Ohtani on the mound. Now they got Glasnow, Ohtani. They picked up another guy from Japan.
Sasaki.
Yamamoto barely pitched in the postseason. Blake, he only pitched
Blake
a few
Snell.
Times.
They had the Cy Young Award winner, a two-time Cy Young Award winner, Blake Snell.
This Dodgers thing, I mean, give me something on this, Jeff.
And
this
the Cubs piddle around and don't spend any money.
This has gotten out of hand. You can't say they don't spend any money.
So,
you can't say they don't spend it. They do spend money. They spend more than anybody in their division. And I'm with you. Trust me. I'm behind you. But I'm saying, what the Dodgers are doing, this
they
is,
should
this
be up by Dodgers Yankees. The Cubs should be spending that kind of dough.
You left a team out. New York Mets. New York Mets spend more money than any team in baseball right now per year. Yeah. New York Mets are number one.
That's because that owner wants to win.
Yes. You know, it's funny.
That guy wants to win. He ain't like the Cubs manager that's out there get people looking at the skyscrapers and stuff. He don't want to win. He just wants to collect money.
The Cubs need to be more aggressive if they want to get more.
It's interesting because, like, now, you know, Steve Cohen, you know, he's 45 and 3 years ago bought the Mets. You know, he's motivated. He wants to win a World Series. It is – You'd never not have it if you could. But I do wonder in 2016 when the Cubs finally won the World Series, I do think it shifted Tom Ricketts' focus, right? Like,
right.
He is not hell-bent on, like, going out and winning the World Series and doing everything he can to ensure that they're in the best position because they've already won one. And so now it's more about, you know, creating the atmosphere around Wrigley. He's got a lot of debt that they need to pay off because of all the surrounding businesses that they own around Wrigley. And so I do think his motivation has changed. And I do think the Cubs are kind of waiting in the wings for another, you know.
As long as Ricketts is the owner, Cubs will never win another World Series.
I don't know if I wouldn't go that far, but I just, right now, his motivation is not to, you know, make sure that they're as competitive as those other teams are. The Dodgers, they've got the huge advantage. They struck at the perfect opportunity, and it really wasn't their doing. They were fortunate that their TV contract was up when it was. I don't remember. Was it 2014? I don't remember exactly the year when they signed the deal that they did.
Yeah.
But they were just fortunate that their television deal came up when people had, like, cable was still really a thing, right? Like, and they cut a deal with Time Warner.
Okay.
With other television outlets were bidding. Everybody wanted the Dodgers rights in LA, and they hit a guaranteed deal at a time when cable television, when people hadn't started cord cutting yet.
Okay.
And because of that, the Dodgers have a guaranteed, I think it's $337 million, a check that's cut to them at the start of every baseball season from is it Time Warner? I can't remember, because AT&T had it, and then I don't remember who bought who.
So they're playing with house money over there.
But they're getting $337 million off the top that no other team is getting right from the outset. Meanwhile, the Cubs started their own television network in Marquee, and they're finding that the appetite for people to subscribers, you know, like, they're not generating the amount of revenue that the Dodgers are.
The Cubs are the only large market team in their division. They should win the division every year.
I know, but they look at it.
I mean, yeah.
They should win the division every year.
I agree, but they're still spending more than any other
team. They're not going to win this year either, Milwaukee.
Well, we're on to it, so let's talk about it, right? Like, let's talk about their big swing in the offseason. All right, this thing's already looking bad. This is already looking bad. And the reason it's looking bad is Cam Smith is going to make the roster.
Yes.
I mean, this is...
No, I don't know. I don't get that one at
all.
What
is going on?
Cam
Smith, in my opinion, was their best minor league player.
Here's what I want to know right now, though. If we... Are the Cubs going to... Cam Smith's out of the mix. If Tucker has the year that they paid him for, right? Are they going to keep him? Are they going to spend? Because he's going to want $500 million, right?
Gone. He's going to
So now you lost somebody. Cam Smith. You bought this guy in for a 1 year that you know you're not going to win. I'm sorry. The Cubs might win 90 games this year.
No.
Okay?
No,
well, whatever. They might win 90 games. What I'm saying is you're not getting past the Dodgers. I mean, look at the punch that they got. You're not getting past them. No way.
Cam Smith is making the opening day roster. They traded.
It does look like it's
looking that way, and it makes you sick because we got a guy who I think is going to be fine. I think I like Tucker. All right, I don't want to sit back.
He's a top 15 player in baseball.
I agree. I like Tucker.
Rental player.
But he's going to be $500 million, isn't he? If he hits 40 home runs.
If he hits 40 home, like. Because you look at it, like, look at the comparables, right? The one thing he has working against him, like all the guys who have landed those monster deals, most of those players were 26 years old, aside from Shohei Ohtani. But, like, you know, Soto was 26, so that's why he was able to... Vladdy is 26. Tucker is 28, so he'll be a free agent at 29. So that might be the one thing that, like, works against him getting $500 million. But the truth is, if he hits free agency... It only takes one bidder to outbid you, and it doesn't seem like Tom Ricketts has the appetite to go into that stratosphere. So, I'm with you guys. I didn't quite understand it.
So if he does what you brought him here to do,
he'll be gone.
Probably,
no doubt, no question.
Unless Ricketts feels the heat enough, where he says it's just a great year. If he's in, a top five MVP candidate, maybe Ricketts will be like, and maybe he likes his time here.
You'll never feel the heat enough because you don't have enough true Cub fans down there. You got a bunch of people that just come down there and want to see Wrigley Field, and the stadium always sells out.
You know, I do think though, like if you've listened to Tom Ricketts at all over, he does seem like someone who doesn't like to hear the criticism. He kind of pushes back, and he did the CNBC interview a couple weeks ago where he talked about, why some of his comments were misconstrued. So I do think he hears the criticism. He doesn't like, he doesn't like people saying that he's cheap. He's something he's pushed back on.
He's talked about being the guy that spends the most of the division. He's kind of ready with
those. It's real hard to spend the most in that division. Small market.
It's a lot. I mean, it's eighth. I think it's ninth in baseball.
He doesn't like hearing that criticism, so he pushes back on it. So I do think it's possible that he will sign Kyle Tucker. It's just I don't know what that number is going to be because once you hit free agency, you don't know what other teams are offering.
I think you get a better chance of getting struck by lightning than the Cubs resigning Kyle Tucker.
Here's a scenario where I don't mind losing Tucker. There's only one scenario. Caden knows it because I talk about it three times a week, and that's the scenario where Vlad Jr. is at first base for us. That's the guy I want to spend the money on. That guy, look at that guy's numbers. He's a great first baseman. He's won a gold glove there. He's super durable.
Do you really think the Cubs are going to pony up and pay for Vlad?
Let a Cubs fan dream because Vladdy is not staying in Toronto. Okay, he's going to end up with the Yankees.
I'm going to warn you, Brett. Though there's a little bit of movement. They're hoping. Their GM has talked a little bit about trying. They're still going to keep working on it. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yankees.
No, I think the Mets are going to get him.
I think they might actually still get a deal done in Toronto. Because if they're only $50 million apart, it seems silly to let that be, if you're already willing to go to 450 or close to it, like, just get to the five if you want him that much. Like,
and how bad does he want to win? That becomes another conversation because that team who seemed like...
You said it earlier. Like, ultimately, it's not... Why would you... Like, you know why? Because... I look at a player like Eloy Jimenez, right? Yep. Like the White Sox, signed him to a long-term deal because they got ahead of it. And he signed it. And why did he sign it? Because it's life-changing money. And you never know what's going to happen. And now at 28 years old, Eloy Jimenez looks like he's headed to the minors for the Rays. And I don't know if he will never, ever touch the money that the White Sox, guaranteed to him. So, like, if you're a player, if you've got that life-changing amount of money sitting in front of you, You just got to take it, not worry about it, and let everything else kind of like fall in line.
That's why I always thought, like, back when Pippen signed that contract, the market exploded after Pippen signed the contract. Sorry, dude, this is what you signed for. Play out your contract and then get another bigger contract later.
I mean, the thing with Pip was he had a bad back. He had some things that, like, there were some injury concerns there, so he took the safety, he took the safety net.
Yep.
But then he complained about it.
Well, he's a professional athlete, dude. These guys are, they're prima donnas. They want to get. He wanted to get paid, and you know what? He got paid in Portland.
Yeah,
he got paid there. And Scotty
and Houston too. I think Houston, where he made the most.
And money. I mean, Scotty deserved to get paid, but he. You're right. I mean, he took the deal, and it ended up being a great deal for the Bulls, and not such a great deal for Scotty. Right. But when you start looking at what's out there, the Cubs need to be in conversations for these players. And that's what bothers me, is that they're not. Like, they, you know, this, like, guys like Soto come and go. Guys like Ohtani come and go. Everybody knows Ohtani pays for himself.
Of course.
Ohtani, there was no price too high for me for Ohtani, because I'm like, not only does he do the two most important things, hit and pitch, okay, he's also, he's his own market.
Yes.
The jersey sales, the Japanese audience, the whole thing that he brings, the Dodgers are like, I don't care what he costs, we'll take him.
I also don't like to... two regular season games being played, and then you go back to spring training and then come back to regular season games. That's the stupidest thing.
I think a harder question for Uncle Clint is, Uncle Clint, what do you like? Is there anything going on today that you like? He hates the designated hitter. He hates that they have two games. He hates the current NBA.
I know you guys are Cubs game because Horner is on the roster.
Oh, yeah, there was another guarantee. If Nico, he randomly spits it out. If Nico Horner is on the Cubs roster the first day of the season this year, I'm buying you guys. What did you offer to do?
Cubs game. No, I'd take you to the Cubs game.
He's taking us to the Cubs game. So me and Caden, once again, okay. We don't have to offer any comment.
I think you guys got a sweet deal on the fence, hooking you guys up.
He throws out the greatest things because we just say nothing but, sounds good. We'll take your offer.
I'm capitalizing on this Verlander bet. Verlander's going to win 300. I still
listen. I'm rooting for you because I love Verlander. He's one of my favorites as well.
He will be the last guy ever to do it. If he gets done.
No, you're right, because no one else has a chance, because it's just
not unless they make you three inning starters or something.
You'll be lucky to see 200 game winners. To be honest with you.
I know.
Like, they're just not going to be around.
Let's close on this. Cubs total wins. Sox total wins. What do you got this year?
I'm going to say that the Sox get, and I'm moving way up from last year.
You knew
year.
Mellor was going to be here. You're showing some love.
I'm going with 61 wins for the White Sox.
That's a 20-game improvement.
That would be
Will Venable Manager of the Year votes.
I'm going to say 61 for the White Sox, and I'm going to say
He's
85 for the Cubs. I have absolutely no confidence.
But you've got the Brewers winning more than 85?
Yes.
Sounds like, yeah.
Yes.
This guy with Council, here's my thing. I like Council. I think he's fine. I mean, but my problem is like, your big move last year was to pay the manager.
Do you think he should be the highest paid manager in baseball?
But to me, that was supposed to be a table setter, wasn't it?
Like,
here's the table set. We're going to pay the manager. Now, I'm thinking, we're going to open up the checkbook. If you're going to pay the manager, then they did nothing.
They did not.
That's what got me.
I'm thinking the White Sox program have like 58 wins, and then the Cubs have 98.
98?
Yeah,
they're going to have a big deal. You better get your head checked out. They are not winning.
He's still watching the Bulls beginning to end.
Dang.
As long as that antenna's working.
I woke up at 5 in the morning just to watch the Cubs.
He was up every day for the Cubs.
Listen,
what does Jeff think for the records?
Let's see. I think the Cubs will probably win. I got them at 90.
I like it too.
I got to win in 90, and I do think it'll be enough to win. I think their biggest competition will be the Reds.
That's what they're saying.
In the Central.
The Pirates.
No.
You know, Jared Jones, now it looks like he's going to be out for the year, though.
Paul Skeens and O'Neill Cruz.
They're talking about Skeens possibly being the biggest waste of an arm ever, because Pittsburgh's not going to spend, and they got this guy that's just going to be mowing people down for the next 8 years, and he's not going to win. You're never going to get to see him pitch in the postseason.
But Milwaukee gets rid of Council, and then they win a division with a guy that's never managed a game ever before in his entire life.
Dude, what happened last year with the Cubs was it was tough to watch. Because
you know how many games he cost us?
I'm with Jeff. I like him at about 90 this year.
Council cost us probably 10 to 11, 12 games last year.
And we didn't hear anything about it from you ever. I didn't even know that you didn't like Council.
Yes.
Jeff, what were you thinking on the White Sox?
Listen, they're still in, still in rebuild mode right now. 41 games last year was a rough year. I'm not going to put a number on it. It's just, I'm in a weird position
right now.
I'm not going to put – I know – the only thing I can say is, looking at the roster right now, looking at the minor league system, I'm excited about the future because you've got a lot of good prospects, coming up. So, the hope is that, maybe some of the young pitchers like Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith can maybe make their debut by the end of this year. And if they can do that, then all of a sudden you're getting really excited about the possibilities for 2026, because they've got the two best left-handed pitchers in all prospects in all of baseball. So, if you've got two top of the rotation guys, who are on their way. And all of a sudden, you could turn things around.
Really, they let really another quickly. One go too. With Crochet.
They had guys that were making an impact in the postseason, and some of their statistics were at the top of the league between Cease and between
Crochet.
I mean, you're looking at it going, man, the guys they let go, they had a staff. Sale was still getting it done.
Sure.
They're probably the most horribly run organization, management wise, in all of baseball. Jerry Reinsdorf's a terrible owner.
I see a big change next year. You know, I see them. I think they'll get into the high 60s. You'll see a turnaround. They're building. The White Sox, we'll see what happens. I mean, Koziel, he's one of my close buddies here in town. Big White Sox guy. He almost lost his mind when Uncle Clint did the DH thing. He wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. He almost lost his mind. He was jumping through the he was jumping through his radio
50%
when Uncle Clint
50% of his game
came up with that one. I don't know. I looked that up.
But again,
you got to remember. I mean, it was a tool there to be used, right? I mean, that doesn't mean you couldn't do it, but it was a tool there.
Hey, David Ortiz went into the Hall of Fame as a DH almost exclusively.
Edgar Martinez, all time great hitter, man, and he was a DH. Yeah. And, you know, that was basically his spot. Shohei Ohtani, I mean, to get off the bench, come in and do what he was doing last year, not seeing the field and just coming in and crushing. He's a guy, when you're at the games and you hear Shohei make contact with the baseball,
it's
got a different sound to it. It's got everything. We saw him hit a home run, but we also saw him hit a fly ball, and we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
You just hear everybody.
It comes off the bat different. There's
and
no
people
doubt
were
about
talking
it.
Trash. We were at an early Cubs-Dodgers game last year, and people were all over him about the gambling, the guy that stole the money from him. At that time, people thought Shohei was really involved with that, and he was just smiling and just, I'm just going to get up there and
he's a world-class athlete, the best at what he does. Like you said, he could be the best ever.
It's hard to believe he didn't know nothing about that, too. It's really
But now that they're looking into this, it looks more and more like he really didn't know what was going on.
Initially, that much money?
The guy was a fraud. The guy was a con artist. Yeah. The guy was acting like he was
advantage
him.
Of him, yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Shohei's here in a different country just, hey, man, I'm playing baseball.
Yeah.
And like now that you know more about Shohei, that's kind of what you see. You're like, seems like a dude that's here putting in work. Usually got a smile on his face. I mean,
there's a lot of professional athletes who have been taken advantage of by people who were supposed to be looking out for their best interest. He's not the first. He won't be the last. You know, right? I mean?
I changed the channel for Shohei Ohtani. I used to change the channel for Michael Vick. I changed the channel for Stefan LeBron. There's guys I want to see. Do what they do at the top level.
They're the guys. They're the reason we love sports. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, man. Saquon Barkley this year. You know, he hit that second level. And you're like, and the Eagles got him for nothing.
Him and Henry, the only reason Henry didn't get 2,000 yards is because of his head coach. His head coach cost him a 2,000 yards.
Hey, we're going to let Jeff get going. Hey, we really appreciate it. Hey, Gavin, shout out to you. Thanks for connecting us. This has been great. I hope you'll come back, man. This has been a lot of fun. We appreciate you spending time with us.
Yeah, no, it was a blast, guys. We'll probably have to do it after the baseball season because I'll be pretty busy. But yeah, no, definitely. It's been fun. Glad to meet you guys. And, keep on keeping on. Keep on pursuing your passion, Caden, because if you like it, it's something that
Caden, get on the mic so you can thank Jeff. When you got a teenager, when you sit down for an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, his brain starts going somewhere else. I don't know where it's at. I think he's checking his brackets or something
at this point. Yeah.
Look at him. What happened? What
I'm on a call with my friends.
So they do something where 5 or 6 of them get on a call every night and they talk, which I think is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Because guys don't talk anymore.
No,
so I'm
sure.
Like, hey, if you guys are going
to
get on
the... And listen, if he wants to do this, he's got to get practice at talking.
You got twin boys, girls.
I got one of each, but they're twins, a boy and a girl. So, yeah.
Very good. But yeah, this has been awesome and we appreciate it. And we'll bring you back on again. Your baseball season starts when mine starts as well. I'm coaching in a high school league that Caden's part of, and then travel ball hits.
Sure.
And travel ball hits for summer. It's the same thing.
You gotta wait the schedule.
Thursday to Sunday will be, he's got a kind of a 2-game-a-week thing starting after spring break, and then he's going to kick up to his full travel Thursday to Sunday, basically.
Yeah, I know.
Through the whole summer, and I'm sure, I think you got, do you guys do?
Yeah, no.
Is that a hockey player?
No, so he's soccer.
Soccer,
and then,
okay.
It's for travel, and then, same thing.
You know, yeah, you know how it
go
is.
Go to Kansas, South Dakota, we've been all over, so. Yes, it is. That's youth travel sports. That's what it is, though. And he also skis too. So that takes a lot of travel.
I bet.
I'll tell you so.
Well, we'll have to do. We'll do a separate segment next time on the youth sports industry.
Yeah,
that's
for sure.
That's a whole business that's blown up in the last 20 years, and
no
it's
doubts.
Just and it's percentage wise just blowing up.
Ryan Sandberg knows all about
it. Oh, we did a full. If you should listen back to our Rhino Pod.
Yeah,
we had one when he had the whole Sparks confrontation and all that. That was kind of interesting. But anyway, thank you everybody for listening to us. Remember to like us, follow us on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your pods. We appreciate it very much. Have a great night.